This conversation was born from the quiet, heartfelt conversations we've been having with you, our community. Over and over, we hear the same underlying theme, which is worry. It's worry about our health, worry about our loved ones. We worry about finances. We worry about what's coming next. And when worry becomes the background noise of our days, something incredibly precious begins to fade, and that is our joy. So today we are flipping the script. What if, even just for a moment, we took some time and we took some of that energy that we spend on worry and used it to feel more alive in our own story? What if we gave ourselves permission to dream again, to do something different, to reconnect with what really lights us up, to help us begin that journey? I couldn't think of anyone better to talk to today than Dr. Kerry Burnright, one of America's, well, I guess best known gerontologists. She is a global leader in aging better and is the author of the wonderful book, Joyspan. Kerry, it is an absolute delight to have you with us today.
I'm equally delighted.
Well, remind us, you know, joy isn't a luxury, is it? It's a lifeline. It's something that we can choose to cultivate at any age, at any chapter of our life. But it seems like it fades quite quickly in our midlife. Why is that?
Well, I think it's great to start with what is joy? Because sometimes we use joy and happiness interchangeably, and yet they're a little bit different. Mm-hmm. So happiness is often dependent on external circumstances, whereas joy is not. And because of that, joy is more akin to contentment than it is to ecstasy. And so another way that it has been defined by the psychological community is well-being. Mm-hmm. And so when we think of it that way, how can we, in midlife and in later life, maximize our joy? And the exciting thing is that the research shows that there are steps we can take to cultivate it in the same way that we cultivate our physical fitness.
So just by having well-being, you're saying if we are filling all those boxes and we've got all our pillars sorted, that just that inner feeling is what joy is.
Yes, it's that it comes from the inside out. And so often we all get to a place and you think, where is that joy? I used to know it. Where is that old friend of mine? And it's never too late to kind of do a reboot on ourselves to get back to that joy that is accessible to everyone and amazingly accessible despite the challenges and the very real challenges we experience in midlife and beyond.
Imagine this, unlocking your genetic blueprint with insights from over 200 healthy aging genes, pinpointing your unique SNPs and potential red flags, understanding what your body needs to thrive and where it may need some extra support. No more guesswork, no more random supplements, one-off blood tests, or one-size-fits-all advice. For the first time in history, we have access to the power of genetic testing, something no generation before us has had. This information could change everything. Join our free DNA webinar and you'll get our Stay Well scorecard jam-packed with the markers that we want you to track every year, starting now. Friends, know your genes, own your health. Let's learn to thrive together. Visit theagingproject.com to register and I'll see you there. It seems like gets a little bit away from us in our midlife, and I think that's something that we all accept. You know, we love our youth and we throw our youth away frivolously, as we should. Midlife kind of gets in, we're getting in, we're doing the grunt work, we're getting deep down. And as you say, then we're coming out the other side. We take a moment, we take a pause, we go, oh, right, so where am I at? Where is my health at? Where are my finances at? Where is that light coming from? Where should we start? I know when I was flicking through your Instagram, you often ask that question, what are you looking forward to? And gee, that is a tough question to ask and a tough one to answer. But is that sort of the starting point for finding ourselves and finding that contentment?
Well, it can be. I think so often, and particularly as women, we have been giving to our families and our jobs and our loved ones and our caregiving responsibilities. And in that, we have forgotten ourselves a little bit. And so there is so much terrific information about longevity that has to do with our physical selves. So it is critical, of course, to be moving our body most days and to be eating foods that are real foods and getting enough sleep. And that alone is a lot, but it isn't enough, because I have had so many patients who are checking all the boxes. They're doing all the protein and weighted vests and smoothie shots of grass. and still it's sort of like, huh, now what? And so this conversation, why I'm so delighted about your interest, has to do with cultivating joy intentionally, but it is an inside job. And it is as research-based as the external things that we do, but somehow it's a little bit overlooked.
It's funny, my husband is the first one to say to me, Shelley, great idea to live to 120 and all power to you, but if it's going to be as boring as bat, you know what, why are you bothering? And that is a really good question, isn't it? So finding that joy is vital, vital.
Yes, I know we always say that. We started by talking about, in my community, lifespan. Great, how many years you live? Okay, we make a target. Maybe it is 120. And then we have refined it, which is a great next step, to health span, how long we enjoy our health. Definitely important. But it still lacks that, okay, I'm in good health, I'm here, I'm alive, now what? So joy span is that quality of life piece. It's that piece that makes me go, yes, what am I looking forward to? What have I created to look forward to, when it's not, it's a little off script, if you know what I mean. So we kind of did what we were supposed to do, go to school, maybe have children, maybe drive the children all around for 20 years. And then this new script we're creating ourselves.
You have such a wonderful, joyous outlook on life. I can see it. It's radiating through the screen here. You've also got an incredible role model, being your gorgeous mum, Betty, who I know you do, again, feature on your socials a lot. 96, going strong, having what seems as the time of her life. Do you remember your mum in midlife, and or was this an outlook that she's always had? Has she always encouraged you to find the best in life?
This is what I think is most promising. The answer is no. Mm-hmm. Betty didn't always have a great attitude. She is the first to say that. So, like, how did she at midlife recapture her joy? And I think she did what many of us are doing now, which is doing a little inventory and a little examination. And so in my book, I used the research to put together what I called a joy span inventory. You're kind of taking toll. And I think I always tell people, don't worry, it's just a baseline. We can always come up from there. But it's a real, you know how we go, of course we know that we're supposed to lift weights. But then the big question is, but are we lifting weights? Mm-hmm. The same thing goes true with our internal strength fortification. So are we actually doing the things? And the way that I've found that the research really groups into four domains or four elements, that if we hit up these four elements, we are going to increase our joy span. And I'd be so happy to go through them if you feel ready.
Dr. Kerry, we are ready. How do we cultivate our joy again?
There are four elements that thousands of studies kind of group. And it was so exciting to find, because when somebody tells you you need to do 1,000 things to cultivate your joy, you feel pretty joyless. But four things we can handle. So the first is to grow. And that is continuing to push yourself to do hard things, to have interest in something you haven't done before, and go for it. Because when we're young, we're all the time pushed to go for it. We mm-hmm. have to go out to the end of a diving board and jump off. We need to stand up in school and speak. But when we get older, sometimes those opportunities are, we have to make them up ourselves. So I encourage my patients to take a little bit of time, take a simple piece of paper, and write down all the things you're curious about. It could be coding. It could be travel to a certain place. It could be mentoring disadvantaged youth. I mean, the possibilities are endless. And don't censor yourself to think, oh, well, how will I possibly do that? Mm-hmm. Just brainstorm them all out. And then you go back and think, okay, what little step am I going to make? Because people who continue to grow are the ones who thrive in longevity. And it isn't just genes, and it isn't just luck. We like to think that, but it is in fact this work. So the first is grow, and that moves us to the second, which is to connect. Mm-hmm. Such a robust literature showing us that it is the people who have meaningful relationships who thrive in longevity. But the problem is, if, like my mom, you're lucky enough to live 96 years, over 90% of her friends, I'd say about 99% of her friends, have passed away. Mm. So in the same way that we cultivate our financial portfolio, we need to cultivate a social portfolio that is people of different ages, different stages, and it really takes work. So my patients who report to me that they're lonely, I always ask the first question of, tell me about how you are reaching out to other people. And they'll say, I'm not reaching out to anyone. No one reaches out to me. I'm so very alone and nobody's reaching out to me. You know, aha. It is imperative that to connect, you be the reacher outer. So that means doing the uncomfortable, picking up a phone, maybe giving somebody a text saying, hey, gosh, I haven't seen you in 20 years. It would sure be fun to get a cup of coffee. Or at the supermarket to strike up a conversation, or to look back over your Christmas card list and maybe there was somebody there that you haven't talked to. So again, all of these are verbs because they all take work.
Yeah, so, and that one sounds really tricky. I love the growing in the fact of setting yourself some things that you would love to go out and achieve or maybe try. And I speak to that with my teenage girls a lot about how wonderful it is to see them do things for the first time and try things for the first time or travel and see things for the first time. And I get a lot of joy out of that now, seeing their eyes light up and sort of this interest in the world. But you're right, you get to a certain age and you've sort of done everything. It's like, okay, well, now is it bungee jumping? You know, is that all that's left on my list of things to do? Which a lot of contentment does come from that I've lived a great life and I've experienced lots of wonderful things. But to find what comes next or what I'm going to be interested in, that's going to be a challenge for me, which I love that idea of growing. And then connection, we speak a lot about that here at the Aging Project. But it never really occurred to me of having friends across all age groups, and particularly as you get older. You know, we've got some wonderful communities here for, you know, these lifestyle resorts that are popping up, people moving into communities for over 55s. But again, you want to get some of the 55s, you want to get some of the 90s, you want to have friends in the 70s as well, don't you? Because a lot of families, it can't come back to families. And if you've got kids that are raising kids, you know, they're living a very busy life. And I think sometimes the grandparents feel, oh, I don't want to get in the way. So as much as that is their life, you need friends outside of your family group as well, whether it be geographically or in that age group, because your family and the grandkids, they're going to be busy for the next 20 or so years.
That's exactly right. And then there's a interesting, almost strange crossover. Once we have other connections, then our adult children and grandchildren don't feel like we're hanging on them, and then they're the ones reaching out for us. So I really did learn that from my mom. She kind of made that change intentionally to say, instead of she calling me, she said, I know, you'll call. I have things to do. And then it made me, so now I call her every day, and so do so many other family members. And I noted that, like, I want to do it that way as well.
But she's busy. She's like, Kerry, I don't have time for you. Your brother's on the line. I have to go. And I've got a party to get to.
Exactly. And she's the one I always say to be that friend. And you know that friend, the friend who makes the plan, who makes the reservation, who says, hey, let's create a book club. It's that friend where you have to put yourself out of your comfort zone. Those are the people who are able to make it all the way with these 100-year lives.
And that's it. And we all have that vivacious out there friend, and they might be 10 years younger. Maybe that's where you lean on. Hey, bring me along to one of your social functions. I promise you I won't be a bore in the corner, and I'm sure Betty brings the party. All right.
Yes, and to be the one to create the group. Mm-hmm. So again, you know, a man who I work with recently said, I'm not in any groups. So we said, what if you created a group? He's like, well, how could I possibly do that? And I said, well, tell me what you're interested in. He's like, I'm interested in older cars. I said, anything you can be interested in, you can create a group about if you're willing to put yourself out there. And now he's got a group of 12 men who meet every Wednesday, and they sit around and talk about cars. Awesome. And the highlight of their week.
That is wonderful. Absolutely. Okay. So coming from your growth and maybe finding that thing that you haven't connected with for a long time might then trigger the next one being community connection.
Yes, that's exactly right. They all do build upon one another. Yeah. So the first verb to grow, the second to connect, and this third is adapt. One thing we know for sure as we get older is that there will be change and there will be challenge. So I get worried when patients tell me that they'll be happy as long as they have their health, or they'll enjoy living as long as they have their spouse. The thing about these long lives is you're very, very likely to not always have your health or mobility, and you're extremely likely, especially as a woman, to not have your partner the whole way. And so if we can start to say, changes are coming and I'm going to proactively adapt to those challenges. I'm going to let myself grieve, let myself be honest that this is not easy, but then choose to find ways to continue on despite the challenges and with the challenges.
That one sounds like a really tricky one, doesn't it? That's going to take some work.
It's going to take some work, and I think the alternative, and I've seen so much of this in my practice, is suffering. So when you lament what is lost and decide, you know, stay in it, it's so much suffering. And in fact, that's how I got into this joy area, is that for 20 years, I was the director of an elder abuse forensic center. And the suffering that I saw just burned my eyes. You know, people alone, people taken advantage of, people slumped over in their chairs. And it was seeing thousands of patients who ended up in these circumstances that made me think there has got to be something we can do to fortify people, to fortify ourselves, so that we're not going to end up in those scenarios. Mm-hmm. So is it hard to adapt to changes? Absolutely. But I would argue it is less hard to give yourself a little kick in the rear in order to adapt, as opposed to 30 years of suffering and mourning over all that is lost. Because the other thing that's not publicized a lot, but the research shows, is that there are so many things that get better as we get older. And the reason we don't hear about them is because the fear-based marketing is there to tell you what gets worse. Mm. Things that get better, one, our appreciation of connections, our appreciation of beauty and nature and music, our ability to not care so much what people think about us, our humor, the depth of our spirituality. Oftentimes, our problem solving as a result of both neurological integration and also lived experiences. So those tools are what health experiences. So those challenges that you...
Over at You Must Try It, we've discovered so many fabulous low-tox skin and makeup options. Many of our guests have spoken about reducing our overall toxic load, so that has become a huge priority for me. I've slowly moved to low-tox products, and You Must Try It have made it really easy. We only stock low-tox products we've tried, tested, and love at YouMustTryIt.com. So we have done the research for you. If you haven't visited us already, please stop by at YouMustTryIt.com for 10% off your first order. Kerry, if someone's stuck on this one, obviously there is help out there, and hopefully there is more wonderful humans out there just like you that have that clinical ability to help us with that. Who would we look to see, and where could you go if you said, I'm trying to get back on track? And we know that perhaps our GPs, you know, are overwhelmed with those day-to-day things. What sort of doctor would you be seeking out if you were feeling the way you've just described and that inability to tap into joy?
I love that question, because I think most of us will have times like that where you think, I really want to get over this and I just can't seem to pull myself up and out of it. I'm wallowing. And I had an experience like this where my 25-year-old daughter was diagnosed with a brain tumor, and I just couldn't seem to pull myself up because I didn't expect that for her. You know, she's in medical school, she's so young. And I thought, gosh, I sort of had readied myself for my mom having these challenges, or myself or my husband, but not my child. Mm-hmm. So I was a bit stuck in crying a lot, which is okay. And I found myself in the garage all the time for some reason. And so there are a few things. One is, I like your recommendation of a doctor, and it could be a counselor, it could be a psychologist who you could talk these things through with. There are geropsychologists, people who specialize in working with older adults. And another source, and sometimes one to start with because it doesn't cost anything, is people that we know. So in my case, when I was able to really open up to a lot of different people and say, they'd say, how are you? And I could have said, I'm okay. But instead I said, I'm not okay. Mm. I feel heartbroken about our daughter's brain tumor, and she's needing to drop out of medical school, and I'm sick, and I feel so alone. And I just was able to, and what I found is some people were like, whoa, I gotta go. And they were scared of that. And that's okay. But there were other people who could say, gosh, you know something? And then they would give an example, and we would talk about it, and we started getting together and going for walks and starting. And the more we opened up, the more we, and interestingly, that helped our connection, mm-hmm. because I, you know, our vulnerability. And then it also encouraged our growth. So we could grow in spirituality, grow in humility. That is what we needed to. Mm-hmm. So yes, I'm all for professional help. And you could also start with your GP. You could start with, you know, any doctor that you go to. You could tell your cardiologist, even, for example, say, my heart maybe is okay, but it's broken, and here's why. So, you know, sharing your pain, I think, is often a good first step to try to think, I am not going to live in this forever. I'm going to walk with it, but I'm going to walk forward with it.
It would be very rare to find someone, again, in middle age or beyond, that hadn't had a situation or some pain, suffering, trauma. And to open that door for them too, as you say, that might create a much deeper connection than you ever imagined, with perhaps the most random of people. May not be your closest friends, because they might be too close to be able to give you some solid advice or to just let you be in that moment. But yeah, there might be someone just there on the periphery who has been through similar or has felt similar, that can certainly help you in that regard. That's a wonderful, wonderful way to connect, isn't it?
Yes, and forgiving the friends that aren't able to. So, you know, there were friends who would just, you know, say something that at that time didn't feel helpful, like, oh, just don't worry about it. Like, oh, okay, what? But then also giving grace. Gosh, maybe this person hasn't been through something like this. Mm-hmm. okay, that's okay. I'm going to go to the next person. And like you said, in my case, it was somebody that I didn't actually know that well. I was out on a dog walk and I just really shared the truth. And it turns out that this new friend's husband had had a brain tumor and brain surgery. And she was incredibly helpful to me. And I wouldn't have known had I not let it out.
Mm. And that takes courage, it takes maturity, which is what we're gaining. As you said, one of the wonderful things about getting older is that ability to know ourselves better and to be a lot more honest, and to screw what everyone else thinks, and I'm just going to tell you anyway.
Exactly. And some people might go, and you think, oh, that's okay, I'm not for everyone.
I'll keep walking, yeah. So we're up to our second G.
Yes.
What is the last pillar of joy?
So if we take the four, so we started with grow, then we went to connect, then we were at adapt, and the final one, and my favorite, is give. So our collective societies have told us this big lie that it is less than an all decline and awful to get older. And because of that, we have internalized that ageism. So as we get older, sometimes we don't recognize how much we have to offer. And so the step one in this is think, do I have a decline aging mindset? Or do I recognize that I have a lot to offer all the way until my death because I'm rejecting the narrative that old people are less than? It simply isn't true in the same way that it's not true that women are less than. So when you recognize that, gosh, you know, every human, especially older humans, have a lot to offer, and then going about and finding ways to give, and it's, I think, primarily giving of yourself. If you happen to be a person with financial resources, maybe it would be a material thing. But so often for most of us, it's giving of ourselves. And an example that was really moving to me recently is that I visit a 92-year-old woman who lives in a nursing facility. And she has been a wonderful guide in my life. She has now unable to speak, but the give that she continues to give is her listening. And I still go and I sit by her bed and her beautiful bright eyes open right up. And I know that I can continue to share what's going on. And I always look at her and I think, even with so many physical challenges, even being in a place that's not her usual home, even having this challenge with the words coming out, she just is giving so much. And it reminds me of an extreme example that there is always something to continue to give. And the research is amazing showing what giving does, like giver's high of knowing that we can take lemons and bring them to our next door neighbor. Mm-hmm. We can slow down and let our grandchild go on and on and on about a video game called Minecraft. All these things that we're doing where we can really give of ourselves. And what a world it would be if we all stepped into owning our older and gave of our wise older selves.
I think that is a beautiful message because, again, there's probably always going to be someone older than us. We might be in that point where we think, this is it. There's nothing, you know, left to find joy in. There's no new challenges. But, yes, you can always seek out someone older. And if they're still finding the light, I think that would be a wonderfully heartwarming experience. Do you find with your mum and with your friend who's now 92, does their spirituality come into it at all? I mean, have they resigned themselves to the fact that forever isn't forever? Have they found some sort of peace in that yet? I don't know, and it doesn't have to be religious by any means, but do you find there's, that contentment? Have they actually found true joy in what they had and where they've been and maybe not so much of what's to come?
I have had the privilege of watching thousands and thousands of people do their aging journeys. And I have seen also thousands of people maintain this joy despite circumstances. So I know it is possible because I've seen it so often. It is also not automatic. So people who are not opting to work on these areas, it doesn't just happen. And so there is, like you asked about spirituality, there is a real potential for a deepening spirituality. Not always, but people who decide, gosh, in my grow or in my give or in my connect or adapt, I would like to continue to grow in how I experience things that I don't necessarily understand. I've seen such, and I know you have too, like such beautiful spirituality and humility in adults. And my mom is one of those people who has just continued to grow in that area. So recently I asked her, gosh, Mom, we've gotten so close, you know, particularly as she's gotten older and so wonderful. I mean, she was never as wonderful as she was. And she's the first to say that. But I said, gosh, I'm going to really, really miss you. And when you pass away, which at 96, of course, we're all going to pass away. And so, you know, I wonder if you have advice for me on how I can handle this. And she said, I have had my life. I lived it and I am ready. And it's going to be just fine. And I said, I know you think that, but what about me? I'm the one left behind. I'll miss you so much. What should I do? She paused and thought about it. And she said, well, Carrie, I think you should get over it.
Thanks, Betty. I'll do my best.
Laugh. And I thought, when I do lose hope, I will certainly go back to that video and watch it again and again, because it was unexpected, mm-hmm. and I thought it was going to be some deep spiritual teaching.
Well, it is. It is, Carrie. That is a deep spiritual teaching.
You're right.
Yeah. And to be able to have that conversation, I think for a lot of us, whether we've already sadly lost our parents or whether we know that time isn't too far away, that honesty must have been lightening, not enlightening, but to actually, yeah. You know, we don't ever want to address that, do we? And we don't want to have those conversations. And sometimes it's too late.
It's so true. If you have older people in your life, it is so great to have those conversations, because then people can kind of comfort you while they're here. So I would encourage you, even if you don't ever even show it with anybody, to ask your loved one if it's okay if you would pull out your phone camera and record them. And that's what I started doing with my mom, just because. And then with her permission, I did them share them on Instagram at the gerontologist, and it has been such a belly laugh of a funny journey, because we have one thing where 6 million people watched her get out of bed and do her little morning routine where she lays on this hot pad. And I think it probably boosted international hot pad sales.
Sure it did.
So the same thing with our own adult children. None of us knows, you know, if today is our last day or not. So I think it can be a beautiful thing to say, it's okay. We know for a fact that there has never been any human in the history of humans who has lived forever. And because of that, I want you to know that it's okay to talk about. And if you, let's say I'm talking now to my 30-year-old son, I can say, let's talk about it. Because what I want for you is to keep going and know that I'm good, right? And I think maybe that could give him some comfort.
I'm sure it would. And look, for your mom, she is now an influencer. Betty the influencer at 96.
It's so funny. And I told her the first time that we put it on there, and she talked about widowhood, which is such a great topic. And I don't know, I don't know, 400,000 people watched it. So I said, Mom, 400,000 people watched your video about becoming a widow. And she looked really serious and she said, why would they do that? I said, because humans are interested in humans, and you're ahead of us, and we want to watch how you do it.
I guess it's another beautiful thing, and we often poo-poo social media and, you know, being connected all the time. But if you don't have close personal connections or in your sphere connections, like the gentleman that you mentioned that started the car club, he could have done that online, or he could find people all over the world that would love to join his club but not be in the same location. And again, there is that beautiful benefit of what we're doing now. You know, we're talking across time zones and countries, and I feel a beautiful connection. And there's lots of spaces that have been created for young communities, again, like Minecraft. You know, they believe they're connecting. We might see it differently, but ultimately that is a beautiful connection for some young people, with all the parameters and safety aspects in place, of course. But there are wonderful places like this where you can chat with elders across the world and find connections.
That's such a great point. I have some patients who will turn on the television. They live alone, but they'll turn on the television and then call someone, and then they'll watch the TV together and sort of talk about it. Or, you know, some families who will do every Sunday night, we'll do a Zoom call, or, you know, some of the new technology things that, for all the bad, and there is certainly bad in technology, there is also a lot of good if you're pretty proactive about it. So with, for example, Instagram, if I'm strict about not following people who, you know, bring bad things into my mind and heart, there are so many good people that I am inspired by. Mm-hmm. So it is a real mixed bag.
That is, but you could tick off all four things with that, couldn't you? You're going to grow, you'll connect, you'll adapt because you're learning some new technology. And of course you're giving, because there's always that wealth of knowledge there that you have gained over all these years that someone is going to need to hear that day, whether you know it or not.
That's exactly right. And your podcast is such an example of such a joy of connecting all these people from all over and listening and being inspired by all the people that you bring on. I just feel so grateful for it.
Oh, well, look, that's why we love it so much, because we get to reach out to extraordinary humans like yourself who have been so generous with their time, and you with yours. We're very much about baby steps here at the Aging Project. We don't like to overwhelm ourselves, because again, as you mentioned, we've got our morning routine down pat, and that took us about a year to actually nail down and turn into ritual rather than something we had to think about every morning. Baby steps to finding the joy again. Where should someone start today?
What if you think through those four things: grow, connect, adapt, and give, and you just picked one of the four? So let's say you think, I'll pick give. And then from give, just one tiny, tiny give. So it might be that, okay, I do know that my next door neighbor is sick. I am going to make twice as much soup tonight, and I'm going to bring that over. But that boost of energy that you get from that give is then enough to boost you on to the other small. So you're so right, that is small, 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 small steps that bring us joy span. But you have to just start with one little tiny one.
And I guess a big one in that is not expecting anything in return. I know we can often give and you hope that something will come back. It might not come back today, and that neighbor might leave it on the doorstep, and you might get totally frustrated, but I did something amazing. And they're not in a place to receive yet, and that's not your problem, is it? You've done your bit, and you've still got to find the joy in that.
Such a good point. And the proof in that is the converse. So I do know many people in my long journey of walking with people who are serially putting out little tiny microaggressions of unkindness. And so they're mad at the server, they're mad at they don't like the neighbor, they're mad at the dog, the TV is garbage, you know, and so they're...
Oh, we all know. We've all been there too, I'm sure.
They're putting all these little ding-dongs out into the world, and it then does come around. And so in the exact same way that all these little things that you're putting out, it usually won't be right away, but over time, it's science, right? It's all this science of manifesting, of what you put out. So you picture yourself as the most fabulous 95-year-old who is so beloved and who has all these interests and laughing and doing all that. You then will be working toward that. In the same way, if we buy into the lie that aging is all decline and you start to picture yourself as worthless, alone, and crying over in the corner, unfortunately, we're working toward that as well. So choose wisely.
Choose wisely. I love that. Kerry, we've all got some work to do.
Yes, I do too.
I would say baby steps are also going to start with following you at the hardest word to say, the gerontologist.
It is a
hard word. The gerontologist on Instagram.
Yes, underscore and gerontologist. So it's G-E-R-O-N is how it starts. And I love to share older adults who are thriving so that we might have some role models to think, wow, if they can do it with their big diagnoses, with their finance. Sometimes people look at my mom and they say, oh, she's just so lucky. And I think, gosh, bankruptcy, congestive heart failure, double hip replacement, double knee replacement, scoliosis, chronic pain.
So lucky.
So lucky.
Yes, we hear you. We hear you. Thank you very, very much. And don't forget also Dr. Kerry Burnright's book, Joy Span. It should become the little Bible beside your bed. A wonderful place. Even looking at the cover and looking at the title every morning when you wake up, even if you don't open the pages, is like, right, today's the day. Today's the day I do something else for future me. And I think that is a wonderful place to start. If you can't do it for yourself today, do it for your 96-year-old Betty self. And when you get there, you'll be very grateful that we had this conversation today. Dr. Kerry, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
As always, the Aging Project podcast is for educational and entertainment purposes. Always seek medical advice from a qualified practitioner.